This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Emily Jashinsky is with us at The Federalist. Emily, if you were here, I would offer you cookies. I just want you to know that.
Never turn down cookies. That's my rule.
Hey, as a reminder, refresh my memory. I think it was you. Was it you that I pressed like on about the new song from Haim a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, it probably was. I'm a huge Haim fan.
I love those girls so much. You know, when their first album came out, I like to stay on top of, you know, new music, and they played here at a little club called The Pageant. And, you know, I think I was like one of only five men in the entire audience, and I was certainly the oldest, but they're really talented. For people who don't know, three sisters from LA, they've kind of gotten into some acting as well, and we've been waiting for some new music, and they just put a song out. Well, let's talk. What do you want to start with, NPR or Signal? I'll let it be dealer's choice.
Well, we can go ahead and start with NPR, but there is an interesting connection between the two stories in that the NPR CEO and president is actually also the president of the Signal board, which is a crazy coincidence.
Isn't that weird? Let's repeat that for people that might not know it. I was going to bring it up. You beat me to it. Yes, Catherine Marr, who was just filleted yesterday by members of Congress, is also on the board. You're saying she's even the CEO of the board of Signal?
She's the chairman of the board of Signal. It's called like the Signal Media Foundation. It's a nonprofit. Yeah, she's the chair of the board.
Oh, my. Well, here she was yesterday.
Why did you call President Trump a fascist and a deranged racist sociopath in 2020?
Congressman, I appreciate the opportunity to address this. I regret those tweets. I would not tweet them again today.
Yeah, she kept saying she had an evolution on her thoughts. The evolution is she's about to have millions of dollars pulled from her funding.
First of all, I do want to say that NPR acknowledges that we were mistaken in failing to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story more aggressively and
really?
Sooner.
It's unfortunate that NPR ignored the Hunter Biden laptop story, but y'all did talk quite a bit about the debunked Russia collusion. Do you know how many times NPR interviewed Adam Schiff about
Congressman, I would love to say that we actually believe we made a mistake on the Hunter Biden laptop.
Okay, all of a sudden there's a mistake. And then she brings people together, though.
PBS programming and the services that local stations provide bring Americans together. It is valued, needed, and trusted by the American people.
That was not Catherine Marr. That was the other person from PBS. But they get up there. I don't think you, in any way, shape, or form, Emily, made any case for continued funding. Now, pulling it might be a little challenging because of the numbers. You're going to need some Democrat support. But that did not go well for Catherine Marr and that team yesterday, did it?
It didn't, and I think also partially because of the clips you just played, she wanted to be conciliatory, and there's just no way for her to truly be conciliatory. She can say after the fact that NPR aired, but she was also forced to admit they don't have any conservatives on their editorial board. They have really a continued left-leaning slant. It's not as though she was able to roll out some dramatic change, especially given her own history. She definitely oversaw a push left when she was at the top of Wikipedia and Wikimedia. So she has a very hard time defending what they've done at NPR in the context of also needing Republicans and Doge to leave NPR's funding untouched. They get about $11 million. It may even be higher than that from the federal government annually. But it's, you know, they would be able to survive without the federal government, but it would be they would have to do a dramatic restructuring. They would have to find out all these different funding streams. So it's a big deal. And she can't quite walk that line because she doesn't have the record to back it up.
Mike Gonzalez was on my show earlier this week. He's with Heritage. He was one of the folks who testified yesterday.
As I said in my testimony, it goes back to the basic unfairness that conservatives for 50 years have been saying, but you're completely biased. And they have the audacity to say, oh, no, we're not. And you have to just pay us. And it's just that's that is the basic.
The gentleman's time has expired.
Yeah, he ran out there. Marjorie Taylor Greene had to clip Mike Gonzalez. But look, she made, you know, they were making the point to Catherine Marr yesterday about how many people were, and you referenced this, Emily, how many people who are on, you know, the staff would consider themselves conservatives versus liberals. I mean, there's nobody. They don't even have like a token. And Uri Berliner, this is what I've told people, including the dean of the University of Missouri Journalism School. I said, don't take my word for the fact that there's bias in the media or bias in NPR. Look at Uri Berliner and what he wrote a year ago.
Yeah, Uri Berliner a year ago blew the whistle on NPR, and somebody who had worked there as an editor for years and years and years wrote an essay in the Free Press describing how bad it had gotten and saying he was a big believer in NPR and in public radio, but it wasn't tenable for him anymore. And you know, he ended up getting let go, which I guess is sort of understandable if you're blowing the whistle publicly in the media, but you'd think actually what they would have wanted to do would be, you know, consulting him and saying, I'm so sorry that you feel this way. Explain to us what the problems are. How can we get better? But, you know, that's not the way that you would expect a lifetime left-wing NGO type person like Catherine Marr to approach the problem. And he left, and he's a contributing editor at the Free Press now. So it's a loss for NPR, but if their mission isn't actually to serve the public as a neutral journalistic institution, then they're actually doing really well at that. They claim that's not their mission, of course.
Uri wrote again, you know, on the Free Press this week, and I think he had a great suggestion that they clearly aren't going to take. You know, his point was that the broadcaster, this was in the headline from the Free Press, NPR should refuse to take federal funds. They need to stop pretending it's a network for all of America and become the progressive institution it truly wants to be. Why wouldn't you do that? They're not going to change their tone. They're not going to cover news more fairly, and their audience doesn't want that, so they'll lose their audience. So why not cut ties, do it on your own, raise all the money you want because they're already fundraising off of this, and just be done with it because the rest of us have to do that, right? I don't think the Federalist is getting federal money right now. I know Odyssey's not getting federal money. We just went through bankruptcy. So how about level the playing field and do what you want to do, cater to the lefties. We're fine with that then.
You know, it's interesting because they seem to still want it both ways. And his suggestion is clearly the right one. But if ever there were a time for Republicans who've been wanting to do this for years, as Mike mentioned in the clip you played, this is the time. You have all of the momentum of DOGE. You have the will of the public to like cut government waste. And NPR knows that. I think it's what, you know, scares them most, which means Republicans have a lot of leverage if they want to actually say we should have a quote unquote public radio station, if there's a project we can do together as the American people, and, you know, actually have a public neutral radio station that serves all Americans because everyone has it on their radio. You could still maybe come up with a way to do that, but it seems highly unlikely because it seems like the entire staff of NPR sees what they're doing as already, they already see it as being in the public interest. They don't see it as being grossly biased or anti-conservative or anti-Christian. They believe that they're already doing the right work, and you can't correct that bias because it's a total worldview.
You know what would be awesome to see today? If there was some sort of leak of the text messages and the emails going back and forth from NPR employees after that testimony yesterday, because I bet that's pretty revealing and interesting. I mean, obviously, that will never become public, but I just think from the standpoint of being very interested in what they would say in the aftermath of that, because I'm guessing a lot of them would not be very complimentary of Catherine Marr because she wasn't putting up the resistance, right? You got to do the resistance. And by the way, there's a lot of good satire out there about NPR. Here's one.
Good morning and welcome to NPR. A quick trigger warning. If you're a human with emotions, you may want to avoid this program. Today on the show, we talk about racism again. We interview Robin DiAngelo, a white woman who makes $50,000 a pop telling massive corporations over Zoom that their white employees are the devil. We then ask you, the listener, are you racist? If you say yes, you obviously are. If you say no, you're in denial, which means you obviously are.
That's not too far from the truth, is it? I mean, if you listen to NPR, I think you'd get a lot lot of that. All right, Emily, let's go into Signal and this controversy. Obviously, it's been a big deal. I don't deny that it's a significant story. I don't quite understand the calls for Pete Hegseth to resign. And I guess maybe the point that I really don't understand is how Jeffrey Goldberg's name got linked into this whole thing on the Signal chat. That is still a bit of a mystery, and I think we need to find out what the hell happened there. But your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that is the lingering question, actually, for because in no small part, that's what Mike Waltz's own colleagues are wondering, to the extent that his credibility is damaged internally among his coworkers in the Trump administration. It's because those questions among Republicans in D.C. about why he had Jeffrey Goldberg in his contacts are the ones that make people suspicious of him. And if you're suspicious of the national security advisor, it becomes very difficult for the national security advisor to stay in that role. That said, though, people in Trump world are really circling the wagons around him since Goldberg released the text messages, showing that obviously the information wasn't quite as sensitive as he framed it the day before when he said he couldn't release those text messages because they were too sensitive. So they found the Trump administration really believes they had a weapon in Goldberg releasing those text messages. They feel like they are now climbing out of this hole just as an administration and Mike Waltz individually. So that was they saw that as pretty good news, as a pretty big boost. And, you know, to their credit, Goldberg looks really, really foolish, even if there are still, you know, serious questions. You know, Mike Waltz could have a good reason for JG, Jeffrey Goldberg, being in his Signal contacts. Maybe he called him once to push back on a story, maybe to tell him that some left-wing story was wrong. These are charitable explanations. Maybe he was added to a group with Jeffrey Goldberg by someone else, and it just automatically ended up in his contacts. I use Signal a lot personally and professionally, so those are all explanations that could be plausible. But Mike Waltz isn't offering any of those explanations at
so
all.
Why do you, just out of curiosity, because you know my producer Fred just got back from Japan, and we were talking about WhatsApp, and when I've been in Europe, we've used that a lot. But why do you use Signal? I've never used it before. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, so one thing in like D.C. journalism is sources. People who work at the White House or who work at the cabinet agencies tend to like using Signal, which is one of the things that's come out since the scandal. You know, you saw Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe talking about why it's actually a preferred method of communication for the government because it's end-to-end encrypted, like iMessage. But even Signal's own people can't get into it. It's encrypted from Signal. So it tends to be a favorite of people who work in government positions because, of the end-to-end encryption. It does create some ethical problems with that, though, with record keeping. So Mike Waltz set those messages to delete after a week. It's another reason people really like Signal. And that is a problem for government employees using the platform.
Well, one thing we could probably both agree on is, don't you love the intensity of the aggressive reporting here and the coverage of this? Because the White House press corps has been doing this for the last 4 years. When Biden was in there, Emily, they were so aggressive asking those questions about why the guy in the White House wasn't even awake. So it's good to see the White House press corps consistently doing their job the same way they did in the previous administration, isn't it?
Yeah, finally, they're really interested in holding power to account. I mean, it's so beautiful that Joe Biden could practically fall asleep and it would be called a deep fake by the media. But now, of course, they're all over this story. That is definitely true. And it's one of the reasons, actually, that when the media looks around with frustration and says, why aren't Republicans going after Mike Waltz? Why aren't they demanding his resignation? It's like, well, because nobody knows if they should trust anything you put out anymore.
But, you know,
they've tuned it all out.
Going further than that, here's what I said. I had Brian Kilmeade on yesterday, and, you know, a lot of people, I'm speaking to the choir here in this audience, but for folks who don't watch Fox, I will tell you that the Fox folks have been pretty aggressive. Realistically, they have been. They've been at Laura had Mike Waltz on a couple of nights ago. She asked tough questions. There were not softballs. I've heard Peter Ducey and others ask tough questions on this very topic. So they're consistent. They really are. I bet they would not get the credit from the CNNs and, you know, the rest of the legacy media. But I've paid attention to the coverage and they're asking the right questions.
Yeah, Ingram's interview is really what helped us see that Waltz didn't have a very good excuse. Because, again, there could be plausible explanations for this that are totally innocent, but she grilled him. She didn't let him off the hook by just saying, oh, well, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of it. She was like, no, why would it show up in your Signal contacts? So, no, I think that's true. And I think it reflects just sort of the logical problems with this scandal that people look around and say, well, we were told the Hillary Clinton stuff was a big deal. And, you know, of course, I think it was. I'm sure you do as well. But, you know, if classified information is so sensitive, then, you know, maybe we shouldn't be letting journalists accidentally into our chats.
It is. I really hope we find out exactly what happened there, because it is mysterious. I think we all understand how you can accidentally type the wrong contact. You know, we do it on text messages all the time. But if you don't have someone's contact, in theory, and that's what it sounded like from Mike Walls, especially the other night, then how does it get included? Right.
Right. Yeah. That's fundamentally the big question.
All right, Emily, great to have you on. I really, really appreciate it. You have a great week, a great weekend, and hopefully that new Haim record will be out in full very, very soon. We can both enjoy that.
That's right. Fingers crossed.
All right, take care. We'll see you soon.